Can you tell us a little bit about what your artistic journey has been like so far as a creator?
It's been a roller coaster, I could say. And it's also been like a lot of trial and error. The 90% of it has been trial and error.
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
Because I kind of came into it wanting to be a musician, but then I kind of now am seeing things in a broader scope. So I kind of came in kind of thinking that like everything was like glitz and glamour. But then slowly as like I was doing things, like kind of peeled away at the onion layer and realized that like it's not all glitz and glamour. It's like it's a lot of closed doors and like not really a lot of people wanting like to let you in.
Yeah. So like getting access to sort of like into like support is what you're talking about?
I've been in the, I guess, the entertainment industry as a whole for like at least 11 years now, right? So in that time, I've seen it all change from like sort of having the blogs and the radio stations and stuff, and then now to like Spotify and like platforms that we're on now. So I've seen that whole landscape change. So it's just like seeing like how early on in my career, I thought that like the gatekeepers were the most important people, like the A&Rs or like the people who were at like the record labels were like the most important. But then after, I kind of realized that like, no, me putting my best foot forward is like what's going to get me that sort of traction, you know?
So for people who aren't familiar with your work and what you do as an artist, can you give us a bit of an overview?
Yeah, now I've landed as a creative director for like my own little creative studio doing artist branding. But I essentially started off as a producer. I was 17 at the time when I started making beats, going to Kwantlen Polytechnic University. And it was just after I had finished aerospace engineering at UCIT. I was supposed to do like rocket science. Yeah. I was supposed to be like a smarty pants.
Wait, you are a smarty pants. You graduated with an aerospace engineering degree? That's amazing.
No, I didn't grad. Like I dropped out of the program. Like I went to this school to do aerospace engineering and like my dad was really strict on me. And then I was like, okay, I'll do the aerospace engineering and try to figure out the music stuff. So I, which is like, how do you do aerospace and do music? Like, that's the thing about ups and downs and the failures, right? And like the experimentation. So like, I was like, okay, so I'm doing an aerospace engineering course. And like the first part is like all theory. And then the second half is like all like hands-on. So the hands-on stuff I do like really well, 90%, like I'm flying colors. And then the theory part, I'm not paying attention in class, classic me, right? So in the hands-on section, somebody hears me singing and they're like, yo, you have a really beautiful voice. And I was like, wow, that's it. Like I'm done. I'm making music. I was like, I'm not doing aerospace anymore. I'm being a musician. And then I just dropped it. I just like was done. So like I just stopped doing it. And I started making beats. I thought I could do anything, you know, and I still kind of had that mentality now. But like essentially, yes, I finished there. And then I was just like doing music production. And for music production, I went to Vancouver. I was like, okay, I'm gonna risk it all. Being from a small town, Abbotsford, there's not really like a lot of, I guess, exposure to that place. I'm about to Vancouver, and like I kind of was already familiar with Vancouver because just before doing the beats, I was also doing acting. I was also like a commercial actor, and I was pretty successful doing that. So I used my acting money to buy a car, to get like the studio equipment. It was kind of like chaining successes after one and like one after the other, you know? And like I did the music thing in Vancouver and I was just like trying to get beats to different artists. So the first artist I was really trying to get a hold of was Terrell Safadi. He's still pretty popular now, but at the time he was really on the whole black and yellow thing. I was doing beats for him and then wasn't really getting any traction. So I decided to do DJ production. You know how DJs were big back in the early 2010s? I was trying to do that stuff, like the remixes and stuff and the bootlegs. I was pretty successful doing that. And then I started producing for like some indie bands. But then I was like, okay, I don't want to like produce beats anymore because I know that eventually like this is going to get played out. There's a key turning point where I decided why I didn't want to make beats anymore. Because there's a dude who was producing for Yeezus at the time. His name was Evan Christ. And me and my homie, Jonathan, we went to go see him at this nightclub in Vancouver. And like, I thought beat producer was really dope at the time because I really liked that one song he did for Kanye. And so I saw the kid do his set and he was really cool and like he came off the stage and like came on the dance floor really quick and like me being as eager as I am, like I approached him right away. I was like, yo, what's up? Like you work for Kanye, like what's good? Like how can I get involved? I've always had that like sort of like in your face attitude. Like I really don't care about like politeness that you have to have for certain things. So it's always been like when I see the opportunity, I have to go and do it. Like I sort of asked, like, forgive this actor, you know, like, so I met him, and then he was just, like, super sort of taken aback by me, and he wasn't, like, talking, and I was like, bro, you're not even that cool, like, I was like, you're kind of a nerd, maybe being a super nerd, I was like, okay, like, this guy's pretty nerdy, I'm a nerd, but he's too nerdy even for me, so I was like, okay, I don't want to make beats anymore, like, that's not cool, I figure out what's the next thing, the next thing is for me to go on my own beats, so, like, I got this little apartment in the Dundas area, like, East Van. I was working at this call center. I got this little apartment in Van. And then I was like, okay, so I had like no furniture. So I was able to find like a couch on the street, and I put that couch into like my house. I put that couch as like the microphone booth. I had like this mattress that I found, and I just put that in the bedroom as like my supposed bed. And I was just like recording and studying. And I was like studying Kid Cudi and studying Drake and trying to figure out like how to use my voice. Cause I didn't really know how to use my voice. Like, I sort of came from a rapping background, but I wasn't a really good rapper. And so I was like, okay, if I try singing, it might work. So then I tried doing the singing thing and finally figured out my voice. And from there, I was able to like start doing my own music and then eventually running into other artists and forming a record label and doing artist branding. So it all sort of like chained up together.
I was interested in what you just said. You went from aerospace engineering to music. How did your family take that?
Throughout the whole music process, it's been an uphill battle of convincing myself, but also convincing everybody else. From the very first moment that I saw that what was rap music, when I could really understand it, I was like, okay, I want to be a rapper. I told my mom this. I was probably like 7 or 8. And there's like this little tape of me like rapping to the camera, Dr. Dre and Eminem. I can't remember the song, but like it's just 8-year-old me. And I'm just like infatuated. Like, you can see, like, the infatuation in my eyes. I told my mom I want to be a rapper. She's like, if you ever become a rapper, I'll disown you. And I was like, wow. And plus, I was so young, you know? And I love my mom. Like, I'm a big mama's boy, like, a big, like big mama's boy. And at the time, I was like, oh, my God. Like, if I become a rapper, my mom is no longer going to be in my life. And I was like, Sam. And I was like, okay, well, either you become a rapper and you lose your mom, or you keep your mom, you don't become a rapper. So I chose to keep my mom and not pursue rapping. Obviously, she was being really hyperbolic, right? But like, it really just struck a chord. And I was like, oh man, I can't be a rapper. In like high school, I'd be trying to like do like music. And then like people were like, nah, like this ain't it. And like always be clowning me and stuff. But then eventually I made a mixtape. And I took my parents' DVDs and I like burnt all like these songs that I had made about like this typical high school house party weekend. And I had made a whole tape about the whole weekend just based off of rumors, because I wasn't really allowed to go party because my parents were really strict. You see, like they're all about school. So then I made this tape and then like people were hearing it. It was like, it was crazy, this tape. Like for like a 17-year-old talking the type of things that I was saying on this tape, it was outlandish, like Richard Pryor, like Dave Chappelle type, like comedy type style, you know, just like nobody should be saying this at like about their own peers. But like the tape sold because of how outlandish the material was. Everybody who was clowning me wanted to buy a tape and wanted to hear what was on it. So like I sold $2 a CD and I sold 100 CDs. So that's $200 I made like in high school. My parents wanted me to go to school really bad. They weren't really about the music. I wouldn't do it regardless. More and more, I guess, the rebellious nature of me just sort of came out. And I was like, I'm not going to school. I'm not this. I'm not that. Like, I don't really associate with this. They were so shocked. But then more and more, they just realized that this is who I was. I'm a first generation immigrant. So the idea of your parents' values are very important for the first generation. You're the first born of, like, the immigrants, you know? So it's so important for you to succeed. So, like, me going against everything my parents were trying to do was, like, it was scary, but also like it was something I knew I had to overcome to get to the levels that I needed to go to, you know.
Now you're in the East Coast of Canada, and you've also had exposure to the West Coast. Do you see any difference in the music scene?
There's a difference in the scene, 100%. Not a lot of people will say it, but like Montreal is, I would say, a little bit more supportive than the West Coast is. But the one thing that also does separate Montreal is the difference between the English and the French, which I don't understand, because they do make really good music when they do pair it up.
I'm interested in talking more about how you got into this record label and like what this label is and the A&R stuff. Can you tell us more about that work?
It's called Chilrose Place. Essentially, Chilrose Place started after I had come back from New York. I was homeless in New York for a little bit, and then I came back to Vancouver, and I was just, like, defeated, because I had, that's the first time I left Vancouver to really try to venture somewhere. This is early 2015. I went to New York essentially to do the whole Tumblr fashion, like, kid thing at the time. That's the thing about me, I'm very impulsive, I do weird things. So, like, at the time, me and my homie took a bus to New York from Vancouver 4 days, went to New York, so it was like, okay, we're just going to be fashion kids for, like, in New York. Without even, like, any rhyme or reason, like, thinking whatever. So we went to New York trying to be fashion kids. So we went to, like, we would go to Soho and, like, Broadway and just, like, post up on, like the spot and just, like, you know, just, like, be dressed up really dope. Like, that was the whole thing. So we went to New York. We're like, hey, we're going to test our dress to see if, like, people in New York can keep up. So we went to New York, and then New York was nothing as well. Like, we went to New York, ate up the whole thing, and then we're like, okay, well, what's left to do here? Because we're running out of money, A, because we're not being smart, buying clothes and standing in high traffic situations is not a viable way to make money. And glitz and glamour is really what got me into a lot of the things. It's like seeing the sort of posh and luxuries. I grew up poor, so I was like, yo, music was like the ability to be like, this could be the escape. Going to New York, I saw how different people were functioning and that you couldn't really live like the way they were showing you on the internet. It was so far removed, and like eventually I hit rock bottom and was like homeless for a bit, trying to transition, finding an art space, and then coming into the New York winter and realizing that there's not enough money. So me, the homie, went back defeated, just being like, there's nothing that we can do. But then that little voice man was like, no, there's like, let's look at what happened in New York and take the little pieces that were good and just keep working with that. The way New York did art shows and how they did like collectives, taking those ideas was what I came back with in Vancouver. And I was like, okay, if I implement these ideas, then I'll be able to like at least gather a sort of a following. And then that way from a following, then you can build your audience and then start to monetize, you know? So I was sort of understanding the business side of it. That's what New York really taught me, was the business side of art. Before, I was always kind of like, okay, art is just super self-indulgent. You make it, yeah, you know? Because I came from being a rapper. So then come back to the band, I was like, okay, I'm gonna put the label together, all the different artists in my community that I grew up with when I was a youngin', you know? Like my brother's friends and then other people that we knew, we put it all together. We're like, okay, the only way that we can really grow is if we support each other and start spreading our music to create like this sort of contagious thing. Cause I knew about like the idea of social media, things being contagious. So if we shared it amongst our friends, it would look like this thing was catching on versus just like one person sharing it. So that was the idea of the rec label, was like to put everybody's work on and sort of create this platform. And I was sort of, it was really like pretty successful because we're making a bunch of music together. It was me, Pablo, DJ Darko. Chilrose Place, I guess, is the name of the record, but the Chilrose Radio still exists as a derivative on Civil Radio, actually. So shout out to DJ Darko. That was the cool thing about doing the record label, was just getting that first taste of like art business, you know, art commerce.
Can you tell us a little bit about what your day-to-day looks like now as an artist or even like as a business person?
Just a couple of months ago, coming to the realization that like I wasn't just an artist. I also had to really learn the business side, and I also enjoyed doing the business side. So like now I'm just doing the branding and marketing for artists. I'm starting like a Discord and getting artists together in terms of networking and doing like collaborations, because I also have my musical ear being a producer, right? So it's, everything now has just been collecting all my talents, just being able to put them all to use, because I spent a lot of time just being by myself and like honing in on my skills. And now my whole day-to-day is just like doing artist branding and like social media for artists, like their rollouts for their songs and like how that's going to look on the social media platforms. I do a lot of stuff with graphic design, and then just now messing around with 3D, and I'm looking to invest into a proper 3D computer, which is pretty expensive, so it's going to take some time. So I'm just trying to do graphic design mainly and then push that into like 2D. When I was in New York, I was drawing a little bit because I got influenced by graffiti. So I feel like every time I hit the East Coast, I always get like an itch to draw. Now all my passion projects is kind of like me trying to combine every kind of talent that I have into something, you know? It's like all the little things that I practice by being by myself, doing the Outliers thing, Malcolm Green, like 10,000 hours, all comes down to like my day-to-day of just wanting to push myself.